Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's time for Bridges to Business Radio.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey there.
Hey, everybody. It's Friday afternoon, and it's Bridges to Business. I'm Ann Revel Petcher, your host. And I should have taken a breath before I said that. I guess it's time we can all do a little meditation here. We have a really fun show today. We are featuring two companies that provide services that make businesses in Wilmington succeed. And I am going to introduce first John Hinnant, who's with MWM Company.
Moss Warwick Matthews Real Estate.
Thank you. Because I can't pronounce it. Thanks for joining us, John. And Adam Shea, CPA.
Thank you for having me today.
Would you have been a CPA if it didn't rhyme with your last name?
Yeah, a lot of people get a good kick out of that.
Adam Shea, CPA, joining us today. We're going to get to some interview questions with these guys, but I also have a special guest co-host today. My friend Cal Hackman is joining us from Wake Forest. Hey, Cal.
Hi, Ann.
I met Cal a few years back when he was a partner with Grant Thornton in Raleigh. And he has since left Grant Thornton and took that big fat retirement package they have for CPAs over there. But he's doing a lot of business consulting. He hasn't left business. So he is on the board of some up-and-coming companies. But he also advises a very entrepreneurial group out of Washington. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Springboard before we get started?
Sure. Springboard Enterprises is a not-for-profit accelerator for women-owned businesses. We've helped about 500 women raise over $5 billion of capital for their businesses since we started in 2000.
Wow. These are all entrepreneurs.
These are all entrepreneurs, all women-owned businesses, women-owned, women-run. And they range from businesses that are very large today to, just startups.
Cool. Very cool. Well, great. So feel free to chime in with questions anytime you have one, Cal, but I'm going to start here with Adam. I'm going to give John a minute to cool his jets and hang out.
Last minute, and it's swinging in at the last minute. Yeah, to get
he's going to buy the beer. So, Adam, tell me about your firm.
Sure. We just completed our fourth year here in town and started out, 4 years ago, just myself for the first 2 years. Mm-hmm. And the last couple years have been fortunate to add a person per year.
Wow.
And we have five of us in the office now and do anything from tax preparation, tax planning for businesses, individuals. Do a lot of work with businesses also to help them understand their financials, profitability, things like that.
I was going to say, people think of CPAs and they immediately think tax. Is there a reason for a CPA to exist outside of tax?
There is. I think when you have the right CPA, they're really your trusted business advisor. Hmm. And anytime you have major issues coming up, it's someone you look to, turn to. They may not necessarily be able to solve the problem themselves, but they definitely have resources at their short arm's length away to be able to help people.
Well, and I'm sure you've seen a lot of businesses from the get started phase on how to structure a business as right up through very active, growing businesses that you're dealing with.
Sure. And with the startup, a lot of people aren't sure. Do they turn to the attorney first? Do they turn to the CPA first? It's to a certain extent, it's kind of a commingling of the two. Mm-hmm. It's great if you have access to a team that works well together. But part of that is the legal structure of setting things up. And then part of it is setting up things the most optimal way from a tax perspective and everything else.
So you're not just a QuickBooks advisor kind of thing.
No, where our passion is, really helping people and using our brains rather than our fingers just to do data entry.
Yeah. So you serve more businesses than you do individuals. Is that correct?
Yes. That's
what kinds of businesses do you work with?
All over the spectrum. I'd say a common theme on a lot of them are service-based businesses. Uh-huh. So we might work with law firms, marketing firms, dental practices. And then also we've started to do a more concentrated effort to do tech-related startups and startups out there.
Good. I hope you're really busy with Wilmington tech startups. Yeah, let me just say.
We're trying to make that happen. And
I'm knocking
help
on
that,
some wood right now. that's excellent. So how are you doing that? How are you going about finding those tech startups to help?
Sure. Part of that's just getting out in the community, involved in things. you know, right now, a lot of my time and effort, at least on the volunteer side, is out there helping the UNCW Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship Center.
Great.
And
we've had Jim on the show before.
Sure. And just getting involved there with the center itself, with the Seahawk Innovation Funds, that's going to be the funding, private funded mechanism there to help the startups as well.
And, yeah.
You know, kind of doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes right now.
So do you actually advise some of the companies that are in the CIE?
Yes, and I've held, I guess, in December we had another CPA from my firm and myself went to the CIE, and we had office hours where we basically provided a couple hours of our time. Jim set up appointments, and we just, you know, answered questions, gave advice to some of the startups.
Because these are pretty early-stage companies for the most part, aren't they?
And some of them can even be, you know, a couple of them I talked with, it's, you know, I guess I'm admitting that I'm a little older than I would like to be, and now referring to the college kids.
There's no video camera in here. So.
Now referring to the college kids as kids, but, you know, kids in college who have a great idea are balancing school and that, and just really haven't had any experience in the business world.
Sure.
And so they need that guidance and support to head in the right direction.
Yeah, giving them a good, solid footing to start out on financially, I assume. So in that case, you're not really advising about taxation so much. It's more about structure and...
Yeah, structure and what they need to look at and kind of common mistakes we see people make in the startup phases. You know, a lot of times, you know, people may not necessarily set up their business structure right, or they may completely commingle personal and business funds and other things that we...
Yeah, I don't know anybody who's ever done that. Certainly not in a startup environment. So a lot of big things going on this year in terms of changes to law that affect how companies deal with tax monies, et cetera, and things like the Affordable Care Act. What kinds of things are really impacting the companies as you're advising people today?
Sure. You know, as you mentioned, there are a lot of changes that are kind of going into place here with the Affordable Care Act. They have at least postponed the side of that that was going to penalize companies if they don't implement health insurance for their employees, at least through next year. But companies still need to look at that, the environment, whether you're a business owner and providing, you know, health insurance for your employees or just your family. The unfortunate thing, you know, and I live and breathe it personally as well as the people I'm helping with, is the cost of health insurance has really skyrocketed. And so you've got to look at not necessarily just a tax issue, but look at what makes the most sense for what you're paying in premiums versus your coverage and risk. And do you pass that cost on to your customers in your pricing, or how do you handle that?
I assume that actually business owners need a lot of help determining how to offer healthcare coverage for their employees and the like. Do you ever run into those kinds of questions?
Sure. It's been pretty frequent because here prior to 2014, you used to be able to reimburse your employees for their health insurance premiums, basically tax-free reimbursement for the employee, deduction for the business. As part of the Affordable Care Act, they've changed the way and said basically you can't do it. So you're either paying for the plan directly as a company, or you're going to have to shift that reimbursement to W-2 payroll for those employees, which then means both the company and the employee is paying more because you're paying payroll taxes on that.
Oh, I see. I see. So it's not a pre-tax
thing it's anymore. Gotten...
What was that called? TSA? Not TSA. What was the pre-tax program that you could put your health care
Money into? There's like flex spending plans.
Yeah.
There's Section 105 plans, other stuff out there.
So talk to me about what kind of advantages, though. Now we've talked about the things that are disadvantages tax-wise. What kind of things can businesses come to you with, and where might you be able to help them have a tax advantage?
Sure. Well, to me, it's important that business owners, you know, and a lot of and individuals as well, that they look at taxes from a more proactive and planning perspective than the preparation, which is historical, with planning and, you know, really thinking through things, looking at the timing of things. You can really set yourself up for a situation where you can save yourself a lot of money. Structuring yourself certain ways corporately, you can really reduce your payroll taxes for the owner as well via S corporations. So there's some things you can do there, but it's kind of shocking when you sit down with someone and you say, all right, you're making, you know, $100,000 a year, you're paying this much in payroll taxes. If you did it this way, you could cut that in half, which may save them, you know, $6,000 or $7,000 per year.
Mm-hmm.
You do that over 10 years, and that's a nice little chunk towards retirement.
It's a year of college.
Yep. Don't remind me of that. My kids are 4 and 20 months. So.
I have one who's got one more semester after this at Georgia Tech, and I got to tell you, I'm going to be really happy to get that diploma handed over to him. So talk to us about innovations in your field specifically. What kinds of things are you seeing that are changing? I know, Cal, you certainly have a history in the world of taxation and accounting. Tell us some of the things that are new.
Sure. There's a lot of new technology tools, and I'd say the industry is getting disrupted a little bit. I wouldn't say every firm's adopting them, but you're starting to see cloud-based accounting systems. You know, to our earlier conversation we were having before we went on air about just couriers delivering information back in the day.
Pigeons, right?
Now you have, you know, Skype, GoToMeeting, other stuff where I can work with people up in Raleigh. I have clients that have a U.S. Subsidiary here that are over in Italy.
Oh.
And like yesterday, it's like he hit me on an email and he's like, can we Skype for 5 minutes? We just need to talk through this.
Sure.
And I'm Skyping with a 70-year-old guy in Italy, which is just kind of crazy and great. But there's a lot of tools like that and portals and just ways to share information that kind of eliminates the need, you know, a lot of the paper pushing and other things. And even data, and some of the new tools can eliminate data entry or reduce data entry to the point where either the business owner or the CPA is more focused on the value-added activities than having to do some of the number crunching.
So is that because of the different technologies that other partner firms, like, for example, I know that because I use QuickBooks, I use it online, it just automatically syncs with my bank account, which is lovely. It means all those transactions, all I go in and assign a code to them, right?
Sure.
I don't have to go in every week after everything that I've done. Is it because of the relationships externally?
A lot of that is, you know, what you've seen in the last couple of years is companies like QuickBooks Online, Xero, adapting or driving bank feeds coming into accounting systems. And with some of them, you can even set up your rules. So, okay, I have, you know, a $500 check to Landlord LLC each month,
right?
You know, that automatically can get classified as rent by the system, you know, with certain systems. That's the point they're progressing to.
Oh, that's great. Smart. It's getting smart. So what kind of things do we need to look forward to in terms of law changes, tax law changes in North Carolina?
Sure. There have been a bunch of those implemented here. I guess it was signed last July, but here in 2014, the tax rate, corporate rates dropped some. Individual has dropped from anywhere from 6.5% to 7.5% to 5.8%.
Wow.
You know, they have, so that's going to lower the rate. Used to be, though, that business owners could exclude the first $50,000 in income from North Carolina income tax. They've taken away that deduction here for business owners, so that'll be kind of offset the 5.8%.
I was going to ask you how we were going to run the state.
Yeah.
How are we going to run the state if we don't have enough tax?
Yeah. So things are being shifted around. So it's, end of the day, it's a little hard to predict now how it'll be, you know, how it'll all play out in the end. But, you know.
So are there things that people should be doing now to prepare for these tax changes, besides talking to you, of course?
Sure. I mean, the big thing the state pushed for people was every employer was supposed to have employees complete a new NC-4 withholding form before the year was up.
Right.
And if you under withhold for no reason as an employee, the state can now penalize you 50% of your under withholding. So people need to look at that NC-4 form and make sure they have it right.
Wow. People being as an employee.
Yep.
Because
that's
going to
fall on the employee and not the business or business owner.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to switch gears here for a minute because, you know, this taxation thing can get a little bit, you know.
A little dry.
You specifically are really involved in this community. Tell me about some of the things you work on in and around Wilmington as a volunteer.
Sure. You know, there's lots of different things. As I mentioned, the UNCW-CIE pretty actively involved with that,
right?
Supporting that, involved there. One of the things I'm, you know, pretty proud of as a business owner is the business is a certified B Corporation, which is basically a sustainability certification, and just means you treat your people your place, meaning your community and your planet or environment.
Right.
You know, right.
And how do you become a B Corporation?
So there was some entrepreneurs in the Philadelphia area had a shoe company, I think it was N1, that they sold, and they kind of were looking at what they were going to do next and decided to launch this nonprofit to really get, you know, raise the bar on environmental standards, make sure people aren't, you know, and social standards, make sure people aren't greenwashing. And they've developed a pretty rigorous testing method and that you have to go through processes. They actually audit you as well to basically it's random audits, but they audit you to make sure you are doing what you say you're doing.
Really? And how do they do that? Do they physically send someone to your offices?
So there's, and this surprised me a little bit. There's two of us in two companies here in Wilmington. The other one being Do Good Real Estate that does residential real estate. Mm-hmm. They got audited. The B Corporation came down last summer and checked out all their stuff, sat down with them for half a day and went through everything for them. I just thought it was interesting they came all the way down to Wilmington and didn't pay me a visit too. But,
maybe they need an efficiency instructor.
Maybe they're saving it for, you know, another visit this summer.
A bigger
one. You know.
They're watching your every move.
But it's interesting. And there's a whole movement there just with investors looking for companies that are, you know, involved in that field or treated that way. And then above and beyond that, there's probably about 20 states that now recognize B Corporations as legal entities.
Oh.
So here in North Carolina, I can only be certified, which is just basically a stamp from the nonprofit.
Right.
But the states that recognize it, actually, the legal charters give you protection. And because as a corporation, you are basically there to maximize shareholders' monetary value.
Right.
And with the B Corporation legal status, you can actually consider these other factors when you make your management decisions.
So you could be a B Corporation instead of an LLC or an S Corp or what have you, but not in North Carolina.
Not in North Carolina, but Delaware did add it. Delaware did add it this year, which is kind of a big
one.
So, you know, that's another thing I'm, you know, actively involved with. Interested in, and as part of that too, I do the we do the 1% for the Planet program, which
is cool.
We donate 1% of our gross sales to local environmental nonprofits.
Oh, that's great! Very cool.
So, Adam, let's go back to client service. One of the, you know, you talked about value add and all that. Can you tell us just a couple of the most exciting or the most rewarding things that you've done for your clients?
Sure. I mean, I think it's really rewarding when, you know, people have been going for a little bit on their own, starting to make some profit and, you know, to the point where they're starting to have to incur taxes with them. They may be out there as a sole proprietor, LLC, still paying a lot of self-employment tax and basically walking through options there as far as S corporations and saving them on taxes, retirement savings plans, other things they can do there. You know, those are typically the S corporation saving will be one of the bigger things out there as far as immediate. And then the other thing is just helping those businesses, you know, set up their foundation for growth and helping them with their infrastructure and making sure they understand they have what they need now as well as what they need for the future.
Sure.
And part of that, as we talked about, is staying on top of these new tools that are coming out and trying to give them new innovative ways to, you know, at least manage their accounting. We don't want them to do innovative accounting itself, but, or, you know.
That's what I do, but I do it by mistake.
No, but as you say, you know, getting a good foundation is important for the future because some of the early decisions they make really have an impact later on. And that's great. Yeah.
So. And it's interesting too, you know, as I've started to work with some of these more of these startups, I've gotten involved in the conversation where we're having discussions with them. Okay, I'm talking with investors. What do I need to look at? What do I need to put together? You know, and things like that. And that's pretty exciting to see some of these newer, younger companies, especially here in Wilmington, that are gaining traction to where they're at that point and are smart enough to ask those questions and have those resources both in, you know, professional service providers as well as, you know, Jim Roberts and his team at the UNCW-CIE,
right.
You know, Doug Springer at Cape Fear Community College.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's great resources here in town. Anyone who doesn't say they're great resources in town just maybe hasn't been connected to part of that network there.
But well, let's fix that.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to come back to you in just a minute. I'm going to scoot over here and talk to John for just a minute. Which means I'm literally going to turn my microphone so I can see John.
Allow me to move my microphone.
Yeah, move your microphone. So speaking of somebody who knows how to help businesses get a footing and grow and figure out where they need to be to make get the most bang for the buck. Right. When I first met John, when I first moved here, you were involved in WDI, and you've since gone over to the real estate side of helping companies.
The privates. I'm in a sense still doing a lot of the same thing, except I'm not – managing a nonprofit organization, and I'm doing a lot more site selection for profit. I've moved into the commercial real estate realm and been there since September. And
so what's it like to get started? What kind of hurdles have you been facing?
There's a lot of hungry if you're contemplating a move into real estate, whether it's residential or commercial, you have to anticipate a slow start because you have to develop a pipeline. And one of the things that I did in economic development was I developed relationships with building owners, developers, and a lot of businesses who also already had establishments with realtors and real estate professionals. And so I was coming into the game knowing where all the relationships were. And it wasn't like I had a book of business already. I had a book of relationships. And one thing that you really want to do if you're considering a real estate move is, measuring the value of your network. You know, who can I call to put a property in front of and say, hey, this might be something that interests you. And then understanding, who's already got relationships with realtors.
Because that was
one of the things that I had underestimated when I made my move. But, getting started, it was a slow pipeline, but here, I don't want to say things are great right now, but in the last 24 hours, I've had a building close on as a buyer's representative.
Oh, great!
I have a lease to purchase out for signatures right now. This morning, I wrote an offer, this afternoon, the reason I was running in last second is I wrote an offer on behalf of a tenant to lease a restaurant space, and yesterday we listed another building.
Wow.
Just outside of Wilmington. So and all four properties were significantly uniquely different than the other. So it's been a bit of a roller coaster ride, but we had a slow start that was anticipated. Mm-hmm. We had done some proper planning and saving, my wife and I. And so it's nice this week to be able to bring some cabbage home.
Yeah. So,
it's been a good run. And I think the timing for me, I felt like the timing was perfect. And if you're watching some of the announcements, and particularly with the new Class A office building plan for downtown, additional small businesses and restaurants opening up, and there's a lot of momentum, I would say, especially in the downtown area. But I'm watching activity all over the place, and it's been really good.
Yeah, I was going to say, talk to me about how much of the Wilmington metro area do you?
So, New Hanover, Pender, and Brunswick County.
Oh, okay.
I have done a deal up in Onslow, and that would happen to be another gentleman in our firm has a client up in the Jacksonville area, and he listed several properties for him, and I happened to be on call duty that day, took a call, and we went up together and signed a lease. So that kind of thing does happen, and we do venture outside of those three counties. However, we really try to stay – the majority of the inventory of businesses, the market share is really closer into the city limits in Hanover County.
Yeah. I would assume that you probably have some pretty strong connections here downtown.
I do, and I developed quite a relationship with folks around the state in my time at WDI. In fact – I'm negotiating a deal next week for a national client that was a relationship that I established as a member of the Urban Land Institute. And so a contact I met from the West Coast at ULI last year, when he began his corporate work, went through his Rolodex for ULI members, and being the only member in town, he called me and I said, well, hey, it's just so happens I've gone to the private sector now. And he said, even better. Now we can make money together instead of taking advantage of you as a downtown guy.
So what's a ULI?
Urban Land Institute.
The Urban Land Institute.
So it's an international organization that kind of promotes and advocates on behalf of urban issues.
Oh, great.
A lot of your skyscraper developers are members. A lot of public policy professionals are members. Hmm. And they really kind of get together every year and share best practices. And they have They have regional chapters. The Triangle and Charlotte both have chapters. We fall into the Triangle's genre, if you will. But they get together routinely and regularly and discuss public policy as a means to spur and encourage urban development and urban lifestyle.
Interesting. So I have probably never worked with a commercial real estate broker. Now, are you considered a broker or an agent? How do you?
Well, so yeah, it's all the
same.
All
of the above. Okay.
Agent and broker is the same thing.
Okay. So, Mouse Wart Matthews.
Mm-hmm.
Why them? Why did you choose them? You have, I'm sure, a lot of options.
I did. I even had an option of going independent on my own.
Right.
Lots of things go into play. One, you want to join a firm that's got some market share.
Mm-hmm. We do see those signs everywhere we go.
And it's a situation where you're assigned what I described earlier as desk duty, where you have about 5 hours a day where somebody's going to be riding down the road. They're going to see a sign.
And they're
going to call, and you're on desk duty. You get that call.
Yeah.
And so it's important that you choose a good firm that has a lot of market presence and market share. Two, it was a little bit of the culture of the office. I already knew a lot of the guys. They're all men of faith. They bring their dogs to the office. They all have family. They all volunteer and participate with different nonprofit capacities. And coming from a nonprofit world into the private sector, it's kind of like 12 steps. You don't want to get too far away from it. And so being around guys who have a commitment to the community, and our company is a major sponsor of the YMCA and many of their road races and running the triathlons and things.
And so it was a comfortable connection.
Very comfortable. Yeah. And we had done, and I had talked to a lot of firms and just felt real comfortable with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And they had done probably in the last 3 years, they probably sold 6 or 7 buildings downtown, and I played a role in a lot of those deals at WDI and making the connection between the buyer and the seller or maybe the user. I just played a role in getting some of those deals done. And so it just made a real natural fit for me.
Yeah. Why do you think it's important for somebody to actually use a company like that as opposed to just working
directly?
Well,
one, I think something maybe we could have a conversation with Adam later is how do these startups value their time? That's the realtor's job, is to go find your property for you. Use the realtor as your bird dog. I wrote a blog on our Moss Wart Matthews site on 4 things to consider when shopping for commercial real estate. And one of them is, hey, if you're going to ride around town and call on every sign you see, after about the 4th or 5th company that you call, everybody in town is going to know who you are, what you're looking for, what your budget is. And when the next time the phone rings and it's you, we've got you dialed in.
Right.
I mean, it's just to generate proper advocacy, it's a good idea to hire a realtor, and it doesn't cost you anything up front because we get our pay at the closing, as part of the proceeds of the closing of the sale or the lease.
Right.
But it's important to have somebody on your side when you're negotiating, particularly if you're in a market you're not familiar with. I'm real comfortable downtown. In fact, took a phone call today from another broker who's also happens to be a landlord, and she was wanting to make sure that she had the rate right for a potential lease rollover, an existing tenant. And we had a little short conversation. That's something I'm real comfortable in. But if I were to go, if I had a client who said, hey, John, let's go look in the Mayfair area for Class A office space, I can do an online search and I can really quickly educate myself as to the submarket that's Mayfair. But I've got 9 other guys in my office.
Yeah, and they know Mayfair, like downtown, right?
5 of them have probably made, in the last 5 years, $500,000 doing leases over there. So I've got guys with a lot of, a lot of wear and tear on their tires from mm-hmm. doing the deals in Mayfair. So I'm going to talk to those guys. And I think that when you hire a company, same thing I did when I got hired, look for somebody who's got some market share. And then develop a relationship with somebody. It doesn't have to happen right away.
Right.
I think that's a really important thing. I'm sure Adam would advise people, don't rush into an investment. Take your time, research the market, make sure you have a good relationship with somebody you trust, and go out to work the market. Because I can do a lot of searching. I can do a lot of calling. I can do a lot of background work. And when I call you to come in and let's sit down and talk about your options of property, I'm going to know about where you live so that you don't have to commute 40 minutes to work.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. I mean, how do people really, this whole site selection thing is a really important.
It is enormously important. And you know, I've always advocated when I was at WDI why downtown was so important, because I would often sit down with employers in Boston and say, where do your people live? Well, gosh, they live everywhere. They live in Brunswick County, Pender County, Porter's Neck, some in Carolina Beach, some in Monkey Junction. We've got a few people near Riceville Beach. And I go, well, you know where central to all that is, right? And then, oh, wow, you know, that's really true. It would be easier for everybody if we were closer to everybody.
Right, exactly.
So, as a CEO or a business leader in your company, you'll want to make sure that your office is within, you know, the average commuter in Wilmington's in the car 20 minutes. That's hard to believe for some
folks.
What? That's DOT.
My walk is 20 minutes.
Yeah. So your average commute is 20 minutes, Anne.
Yeah, it is. Right.
So it's important that we make, you know, on my end, I like to look at that to say, okay, where's your leadership team live? Because you want to make sure your leadership team and your company is most happy, because they're the most critical pieces. They're your MVPs. We want to make sure that they don't have to commute too long, far to get there. And then you want to make sure that that location has some amenities nearby.
Right.
Banks, post office,
lunch places,
dry cleaner, lunch, after work libations, you know, what do they need? Right. What do they want? And then you also want to kind of look what could they walk to if they chose?
Right.
That's also a thing that I like to look at, because I'm working with an independent person right now, just one person, and her one criteria is, I want to be close to this and I want great windows.
Yeah.
She wanted natural light. So, that's major
important
consideration.
So I know you've done a lot of site selection assistance for small businesses. What are the one or two really key takeaways that you would say are, you know, really make site selection successful for those businesses?
You know, I think the ease, one, pre-qualifying them to make sure that they have the financial capacity and capability to make the lease, because that makes the negotiation so much smoother. I can, you know, when I'm talking to a landlord or a landlord's representative and say, hey, you know, are they qualified? Who are they? And oftentimes, especially with your small businesses or startups, they don't have a huge name recognition, but having a valuable, a good web presence, having a good couple of years of financial statements, that, you know, we'll do non-disclosure agreements, make sure this stuff doesn't get, you know, aired out on Main Street. But then when we sit down and say, landlord, we got, you know, 5 years of rental history, we've got this, we've got that, and we've got all these things. And it makes the negotiation move a lot smoother, because now the landlord's risk is lowered. They have no fear, and they understand that this experienced tenant.
And I just want to change horses completely here. One of the other things I noticed in your resume was you were student body president when you were in college.
I was.
How does that play into what you're doing today?
You know, I've always been entrepreneurial, and I've always seen opportunities, and I jump on them. I see risk, and you know, I'm risk averse, I guess you could say, and it was one of my challenges in the nonprofit world, is I'd see an opportunity and I'd want to go get it. And I'd have, wait, I've got a few board members I need to bring on board before I jump. And so, you know, I think one, it's leadership. I think it's two, it's building network. And three, I think one of the things I was most proud of as a student government president is that I took a real hard line with my team in the last two full months of school to make sure we closed all the projects we were working on. Because what happened was, at that time, the board the university president, college president, resigned and was moving on to another job, and there was going to be a transition. And as a result of the transition, the president who followed me had to sit in on the selection and hiring process of the chancellor. So the president elect or vice president ended up having to run the organization. So they were able to start with a blank slate. They didn't have to pick up any projects mid stroke. And they were able to just continue to cruise as an organization. So
that's great.
I want to ask both of you guys, because you've both, you know, been around a lot of different businesses. We tend to work. I love to work with kids when they come out of college. Kids. Again, I'm kids, right? I love to work with students who say, you know, I kind of like doing this and I kind of like doing that, but I'm not really sure what I want to do. And we work really hard to give them a lot of opportunity to just go try a whole bunch of things. But there are some things that seem to be out there for students that they're just not aware of. What would you to say? What would you say to new grads who, you know, maybe are working toward getting their CPA a license, or to people who are just coming into, maybe they want to go into real estate? How do you, you know, you come out of college with a degree in what to do real estate?
Whatever you want. I would say, you know, if while you're a senior in college or a junior in college, take every opportunity to shadow somebody. Intern, shadow. That was something I really didn't put a lot of value on in my college experience. At that point, your senior year, you can really dial in your education, because that's a huge thing. I can't underemphasize the ability or the availability of resources, educational resources that can make you a better professional. Both of us do a lot of continuing education. I do 28 hours every 2 years for my appraisal license. I do 8 hours every year for my real estate license.
Wow.
And neither of them are enough. The laws constantly change. The market's constantly changing. And I think that the opportunity to mentor or shadow someone for a summer or for a month or during Christmas break or whatever, the opportunity to follow someone around and see how it goes. Because one thing most people, and if you hadn't figured it out by now, I don't do anything without passion. And to me, it's you've got to have passion and a love affair of what you do. And I feel like, you know, if you're not going to have passion and you're not going to pursue it with 125%,
right,
maybe it's not the right field for you. Mm-hmm. And I think that
you don't really know that until you're doing it.
You don't really know that. And, you know, I think that it's important for folks, because you don't want them to crash and burn. You want them to taste a little success early on.
Well, Adam, I mean, can you be passionate about accounting?
You can be.
Well,
maybe not as much crunching numbers as being passionate about helping people, you know, and delivering that value to business owners. So I do think that, and I see to my staff, you know, that you should have people that are doing what they do, even if, you know, some people are like, oh, accounting's boring, that you should have people who are passionate about it, love what they do, love where they do it.
Absolutely.
But, you know, to your question, it's, I guess where I kind of, similar to what John said, when I was in college and other stuff, I really didn't have the focus on some of the things that I do now, or realization, all right, it's cliche, but it's a lot of it's about who you know and, you know, getting out and getting involved, networking, which there's great opportunities in town for the
students. Do you know that is mentioned on every single show by someone else? I don't bring it up. I swear that it's the thing that is mentioned on every single show that we do here. It's amazing how important that network is. Yeah.
And like, I mean, you know, one specific example as far as that go, which is a little bit more formal, but UNCW has a Cameron Executive Network where it's a lot of the Fortune 500 retired executives that are here in town that basically mentor the students. So the last year or two in school through the Cameron Business School there. So that's a great resource for them, a great way to make connections with people.
That's great. We'll have to have them on the show too. That'd be great. Kind of overlaps to you guys seeing when you're chatting.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of overlaps are you seeing in the business between the two kinds of industries?
One of the things I've been working on, we have a building across the street here listed, this famously
that's
known
why
as
I
this,
see the sign all the time.
Famously known as the Soapbox Building, the formerly known as the Elks Temple Building. We do a lot of, I consider myself an urban specialist, but one of the things I've been pushing on a couple of properties that I represent is the Historic Preservation Tax Credit Project, which allows a developer to
take. We still have that, right?
Yeah, for until December 14, unless the legislature renews it. And it allows a developer who buys a historic building that's on the list of contributing structures as defined by the National Trust for Historic Preservation to take a 40% credit on every dollar they spend renovating a building to the Parks Service standards.
Now, is this commercial only, or
they do have residential for homes as well?
They do,
but it's 40%. You can carry that as a credit against your income tax for up to 5 years. So people who have a lot of rental properties often take a loss every other year, and they take their income every other year. It gives them an opportunity to take that credit against their income tax, and it's just such a great program. But also, realtors and accountants will often cross paths when we're dealing with a small business who's growing, but they're at a point where do I own or do I rent?
Right.
And as an owner-occupant, the ability to borrow is far superior as an owner-occupant of a building than a renter. But I've got corporate, like I said, I'm doing site selection with a national corporate tenant right now, and they are adamant. We are going to rent, and we're not going to rent for more than 5 years at a time. And it's really, really expensive.
Yeah.
But that's their business model. That's how they, that's how they know to do it.
I would say, you know, it comes down to relationships and trust. And as I'm sitting here, you know, John, I'm sitting here looking at John, he's a guy I can trust. And so the people you work with in a professional relationship, you need to have that trust. And, you know, with that, and one of John's earlier points was about valuing time. There comes a point as a business owner, there's only so many things you can do in your day.
Right.
You've got to realize what drives the most value for your business, yourself, your family, and then figure out what other people could help you with that'll free up your time to focus on, you know, those different things, as well as finding people that might be, you know, more effective at or expert at that area.
Excellent. So two guys who are here to help growing companies be more successful with their growth, right? I want to thank Adam Shea, CPA, for being with us today. Adam, if somebody needs some help with their taxation or some accounting advice, where do they go to find
you? Sure. Probably the easiest thing is my website, which is just WilmingtonTaxesAndAccounting.com. So real easy to find out there.
Wilmington Taxes and Accounting.
Probably comes up pretty good on a Google search.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, so if you Google CPA in Wilmington, you're going to find me on the first page.
If you're looking for his name, everybody, his last name is spelled S-H-A-Y. Yeah. John Hinnant.
Yes.
I need a building. Where do I go?
Call me. 910-619-3430. Also, you can call our office at 910-791-0400. The office manager there can patch you right through to my cell phone. Our website is mwmrealestate.com. The company and the acronym MWM stands for Moss Warwick Matthews. We do commercial investment as well as property management and SHOP. We have a property manager on our firm as well. So we'd love to help folks out. And, of course, you know, we're both on Twitter and love to be social.
Everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere, all the time, yeah.
Okay, great. Great show today. Thank you to Cal Hackman for co-hosting with me today.
Thank you.
And this is Anne Revelle-Petcher signing off. Until next week.